our readings this morning are from Acts and Matthew, even though it is in fact St. Mark's Day today, but I think Ben will have something to say about that. I was actually looking to find out a little bit about St. Mark, and there seems to be... Oh, great. Well, I shall... Well, then I won't steal your thunder because I didn't find much. Okay, so this first reading is from Acts chapter 15, verses 36 to 40. This is the disagreement between Paul and Barnabas. It's always nice to know that there are normal people in the Bible. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they're doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him because he'd deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Whakaronga ki te kupu a te wairua ki te hahi. Thanks be to God. Kia mo tonu tonu kupu kia tato. And our gospel reading is from Matthew. Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 to 20. Praise and glory to God. Te whakamoe miti, te karoria ki te atua. So this is about a brother who sins against you. If your brother or sister sins against you, go and show them their fault, just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there am I with them. This is the gospel of Christ. Te rongopai tēnei a te karaiti. Praise to Christ the Word. Whakamoe miti te ia, te kupu mana.
Good morning, everybody. Well, as we hear it, we're celebrating St. Mark's Day today, and that's not an erstwhile vicar of your acquaintance, though lovely man, and I'm sure his canonisation is in process. No, this is St. Mark from the Bible, the early apostle. And to celebrate St. Mark, there are several things that we could touch base on today. We could talk about how he is the writer of the first gospel that we receive, and it's an action-packed little gospel. It's also the gospel in which St. Luke and St. Matthew drew a lot of their accounts from. So we could have talked about that in terms of celebrating St. Mark. Or we could have talked about his influence in the Council of Jerusalem, an important council in the life of the early church. We could have remembered that as we came to celebrate St. Mark today. But no, instead, the lectionary writers in their wisdom have chosen to highlight St. Mark today in a disagreement between Paul and Barnabas about just how reliable Mark is. You're like, Mark kind of deserted us back then, so I don't want to take him on this new missionary journey. And Barnabas, who was also Mark's cousin, is like, come on, we should give him another chance. And Paul's like, nope, don't want to give him another chance. I'm going to take Silas, we're going to go off in this direction. And Barnabas and Mark end up going in another direction. So there are lots of things we could do to celebrate St. Mark today, but what we are really acknowledging today is when he just got thrown under the number 9 bus, and probably the low point of his life and ministry. And so I'm like, I wonder if the lectionary readers just have a sense of humour, or writers have a sense of humour when they're putting the lectionary readings together for us. But it is also an opportunity for us today, I think, to talk a little bit about conflict, because it's kind of on our minds as well. We have had Anzac Day yesterday, thinking about conflicts in the past. Probably all of us feel like we're a little bit bombarded at the moment by conflicts in the world that many of us can really do very little about. And it kind of creates that sense within us of kind of hopelessness, because we see this conflict, we see what's not right, and yet we can't do a lot about many of the conflicts in our world. But God calls us together to be church, to be a light to the world, as we sung earlier, to live in a way that is different and distinctive from the world around us. So there is the opportunity for us, actually, to do conflict well together as a church in a way that sets an example for the rest of the world. We might not be able to reduce conflict in the Middle East, but we can fulfill our calling to be peacemakers and have a ministry of reconciliation where God has planted us. Now, the church is full of quite diverse people. You might have noticed this over the years. So it's not surprising that conflict arises. Now, conflict is neither really a good thing or a bad thing. It's how you handle conflict that's really important. So conflicts will arise because we are a diverse community, and things will always come up that we disagree on, or things happen or whatever. But when it does, it is an opportunity to put into practice the love and the grace that we profess as a Christian community. So I'm going to talk a little bit about conflict today. I'm going to share a little bit about my own journey and then just throw some stuff back for you guys to think about too. So there are basically two responses that happen when we're experiencing conflict, or something happens, that are often ingrained from the way we were raised or our personalities or our life experience. But there's two basic responses that often happen. The one is if we find ourselves in conflict with someone, our response is aggressive. Like, I have a point of view, you have a point of view, and this conflict will be resolved when you come around to my way of thinking. That's how we solve conflict. Now, the trouble with that approach to conflict is that you might win the argument, but you're going to do damage to the relationship. Now, the other way in which often we naturally respond to conflict could be termed passive-aggressive, which is where often it happens because we try and avoid conflict, or we don't feel like conflict's very nice, or maybe conflict, we consider it to be not very Christian even. So we try and avoid it, but then unfortunately the issues never get resolved. And it's not like they go away, they just kind of get swept under the carpet, where they sort of fester a little bit and come out in unhealthy ways. And one of those unhealthy ways is that often if one of our ways of coping with unresolved conflict in a passive-aggressive way is that we don't talk to the person, we just talk to everyone else about it. Or, you know, maybe we give them the cold shoulder. Or that kind of, or we distance ourselves from that relationship and the conflict goes unresolved. So that's not healthy for relationships either. Instead, we see Jesus teaching today in our gospel reading from Matthew, not Mark, from Matthew, about a process whereby churches can work to resolve conflict. And I want to really focus just on that first step, where Jesus says, if you find that you have an issue with someone, go to that person and resolve it. Because if you can do that, then you will have deepened your relationship with that person on your journey together with Christ. So if we find ourselves in conflict with somebody, the onus is upon to go to the person and resolve it. It's an uncomfortable conversation to start, though, isn't it, often? And so what we often do is we go, well, that person knows that they hurt me or offended me or whatever it is. I'll wait for them to come and ask forgiveness, or I'll wait for them to come and, you know, say sorry or whatever it is. But the onus, Jesus says, is upon us to go to the person and make things right. Now, that can be uncomfortable, but it is one of those stitch in time saves nine kind of things, right? To be able to address conflict when it is small. Now, I'll share a little bit about my own personal journey with conflict so that you guys can get a little bit of an insight into perhaps how this might work out and reflect upon your own lives as well. So before I was a Christian, I would approach conflict very aggressively, like to the point of a physical confrontation. Now, clearly, that is not okay. When I became a Christian, I wanted to distance myself from that so much that I kind of went more over into this passive-aggressive side where I try and avoid conflict because I thought, that's not very nice. I don't want to be an aggressive person. So I'd go all the way over to the other side. But this would just leave unresolved conflict in my life and in my relationships with other people, which was also not a comfortable way to be. As I grew into church leadership, I just worked out along the way that you can't avoid conflict if you're leading communities. And probably all of us in our experience of churches over the years, we've seen leaders who have leaned into either a more aggressive stance towards conflict, it's my way or the highway, or we've probably also experienced Christian leadership where people are like, it just comes at me so often, I just want to avoid conflict. I don't want to have hard conversations. I have hard conversations every week, you know? And you just start to want to avoid it because it's so uncomfortable. So in a sense, I thought, no, you can't do either one of those. You've kind of got to lean into it and try and address conflict when it's small. And so what I learned, I guess, is that people actually often responded quite well if you approach them in humility, with a real sense of love and care, and if you listen to people because you might be wrong, right? And what I found was that most conflict can be resolved if the person that you're talking to truly believes that you care about them more than the issue. You care about them more than being right. And so these can actually become great conversations, difficult conversations to start off, but great conversations if you can get into them because you resolve issues. And in resolving an issue together, especially difficult issues, you actually build trust. And if you build trust, then the next time you have an issue, it's so much easier, isn't it, to have a difficult conversation if you've already navigated difficult conversations in the past. So I think, or I thought, that I'd become quite good at conflict. I was kind of known for it in some of the churches that I'd lead in. And along the way, though, I entered into the ordination process, and on the weekend before my ordination, I was away on a retreat, sitting in my room with God, and I said, God, you know, if there's anything that you just need to highlight in my life right now, as I'm about to take this step for you, I'm really open to that. And I felt like God put his finger upon this area of conflict. And I went, okay, God, you know me pretty well, and I know that you know everything and all the rest of it, but I reckon you're wrong. I think you will see, if you reflect on this, that that I've actually put a lot of effort into conflict, and I've actually put a lot of effort into leaning in and all the rest of it. And so I don't want to point this out to you, God, because, you know, it's going to be awkward, but... And God brought to mind two young men in the community that I was leading at the time. And I was like, okay, I see where you're going with this. All right. So these two young men, in different situations, but these two young men had both kind of done things that I struggled with, you know. And what I realized was actually probably I couldn't really respect their actions, and so I'd just withdrawn myself slightly from those relationships. Now, those of you who have been paying attention will be like, Ben, that sounds like a very passive-aggressive strategy that you're adopting right there. And it's true. I just felt uncomfortable in the relationship, and I just had kind of withdrawn myself. But I wasn't going down without a fight with God. So I said, God, maybe you didn't notice, but I did send each of those individuals an email saying, hey, can we catch up? Let's do a coffee. I'd like to talk to you about this issue. And I heard nothing back. I even went so far as to send a follow-up text to one of them. Got nothing back. So, you know, I can only extend the hand of friendship. And if they don't take it, well, I can build a bridge halfway, but if they're not prepared to build back the other half, what can I do? The defense rests. And God was silent. my side reflection at this point is that when God is silent when you're having an argument with him, it's not usually because you've won. It's like God's just like winding up. Anyway, into the silence, an image appeared in my mind, and it was an image of Jesus on the cross. And as I contemplated this image, I realized there was a point in my life where I was in conflict with God. There was a point in my life where, because of sin in my life, there had been a huge gap open between me and God. Now, God hadn't sat back and gone, I can't wait to see what Ben does to bridge this gap. He hadn't kind of built a bridge halfway and gone, come on, Ben, come on, turn your life around, be better, I'm waiting. No. What I realized as I saw that image of the cross in my mind is that God had come all the way for me in his love and his grace, that I might be reconciled to him. He's done the same thing for you. And so then what I realized is that the calling for each of us is to be the sort of people who take the grace of God, receive the grace of God, and then share the grace of God. Freely you have received, freely give. And then God does this wonderful thing where he creates these grace experiences in our lives, and then he calls us together into community with other people who have experienced the grace of God, right? He calls us all together from our diverse backgrounds into these places. And he makes us a grace community where we get to practice the love and grace of God here with one another. You know, and sometimes we rub each other up the wrong way. Sometimes we give each other lots of opportunities to practice grace, don't we? But that's why we're called together to be church, that we can work this out together. And then, as we get used to extending love and grace towards others, we go out into the world and we go out into conflict situations in our families, out into conflict situations in our workplaces, amongst our friends, schools, wherever it is that God has planted you. And we show people a different way of being. A way that in humility we go to people and we go, hey, can we have a conversation? Because I really feel like things aren't great between us and I want things to be really great between us. Could we talk? And you get to work it out together. Now, there is a moment in the liturgy that we have in our Anglican prayer books that we don't always use here, but it comes just before we come to the altar for our Eucharistic part of the service. And it's called the peace. And it's the peace part where I go, the peace of Christ be always with you, and you say, excellent. Even the Baptists are getting it now. It's good. I see that. All right. And it's like a nice time, right? It's like where we all stand, we all go and we shake hands and we welcome each other and all that kind of stuff. And it's lovely. But beneath it, from Matthew 5, as Jesus is teaching, if you are coming to the altar and you suddenly realize within yourself that something is not right between you and another person, go and make it right. And then come to the altar. So what it is in the middle of the service is giving us the opportunity actually to go to someone and say, hey, and then we go to the altar together and we share in that grace of God together. So it's actually a significant moment in our service. So what I want to do in a moment is I want to invite you to stand as we would if we were following the prayer book. And we're going to share the peace together. And then I want you to find someone. And I know sometimes I get you to share something that you're doing. But I would like you to find someone that you could maybe pray with. Where two or three are gathered, there Jesus is. And now, I know some of you aren't, perhaps you may not be comfortable praying out loud, especially with someone that you maybe don't know very well. So what I've also done is I've also put one of these in. I say that, but I'm really just taking Terry's handiwork. Terry has created a bookmark for each of you, and it's the prayer of St. Francis. So what you could do is, if you feel comfortable, is to pray for conflict in the world, to pray for conflict in our church, to pray for conflict in our lives. If you feel comfortable, just go to the level of vulnerability that you are comfortable with. And then to pray the prayer of St. Francis together. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And if you're not comfortable, and if you don't want to pray out loud, that's fine. You can just say to the person, why don't we just have a moment of quiet where we can be aware and pray into any conflict we're aware of in our life or conflict we're aware of in the world, and then let's just pray this together. Do you reckon we can do that? And then just as a church, in twos and threes across this building, meet to pray for peace as we remember Anzac weekend, conflict in the world, and perhaps even conflict in our own lives. So let's stand. The peace of Christ be always with you. I invite you to share a sign of the Lord's peace with those around you today and then deepen that peace by praying together.